Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me. She D T F.
She tell me she
D T F.
I heard she
D T F.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well, Lou, I'm on my bag. Got the code in a spray.
Welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmerie Fun Hour. This is the greatest sex education, comedy, sometimes game show, currently podcast in the known universe. I am your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmerie.
And I am Daryl Charles, the comedian.
It's true. But as we always emphasize, you have at this point done more sex education work than a lot of people who are self-titled sexologists. So.
Yeah, I was pooping today and I was like, I think I'm a science communicator.
It's true.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I got to get into my science communication bag. Anyway, hi.
Hi. Good to see you. We are recording slightly after Daryl's birthday. How was your birthday?
It was cool. Yeah, it didn't start off on the best note, but it ended pretty good. We made a photorealistic cake.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, like one of those, is it cake cakes?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it looked like a bowl of cereal.
So.
Because like, I like cereal.
Would it fit better on the show, Is It Cake or Nailed It?
Oh, it's a cake. Okay. It was, I mean, you know, for my first time dealing with modeling chocolate and all that stuff, it was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. Well,
that's fantastic. Well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much.
And today we have someone on the show. I am very, very excited to welcome. I believe this is your first time for some reason. I don't know how that's possible, but it's true. We are welcoming to the show one of my longest friends. First of all, we met in grad school. So we're talking a sexuality educator, but also a children's horror writer. And also a person who helps other authors get their platforms, and a huge advocate for LGBT representation in literature, among other things. So welcome to the show, Shanna Heath.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. Hey, Timmerie and Daryl. It is such a pleasure to be here, especially with the topics that we're going to be covering today, because as from that fantastic introduction that you gave me, Timmerie, I can't keep my brain in one place. It needs to bounce to a number of different things that I'm interested and passionate about. And that means that I always have a lot to say on different things. I am one of the authors in Other Terrors, an inclusive anthology, which is my latest publication. That's from the Horror Writers Association. It's our latest anthology, and it includes so many fantastic, diverse voices in horror, which we know can sometimes have really negative tropes when it comes to diversity and sexuality. So many of us learned the wrong thing to do when it comes to sexuality by watching horror films when we were young people. And of course, I write for adults and I write for children with an emphasis on LGBT representation and characters. I am a queer woman myself and a mother. And I'm also starting up a new podcast called Magic Day, Magic Night, which is a way for people in the LGBTQIA plus community to relax with some identity affirming mantras and guided visual journeys, because we deserve to rest.
That's wild.
Yeah.
what a thought. Yeah, I was just thinking as you were saying that, like, horror is such an interesting thing for like queer people, because like horror is one of the genres, and I focus more on film, where you are actually likely to see a lot of queer characters, but mm-hmm. they are going to die.
Yep. I was just, yeah, I think it wasn't when I was pooping, that was science, but at another time I was saying, like, horror is such a It's it's it, is so conservative in the way that it treats things. Like, you know, you have to do bad in order to have bad done to you is one of those horror rules. And doing bad is just like being a real person in the world.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. And you know, when we get, if you, you know, when we talk about sexuality in terms of horror movies, you know, just the trope of the final girl and any type of, you know, loss of virginity equals a horrendous death. You know, loss of virginity, something other than white skin, you know, absolutely queer people. And for a long time, queer literature itself equaled death to the queer characters.
Yeah.
A lot of just, it's really interesting because it's like both an extremely subversive genre because you're going to experience like a lot of sex and a lot of violence and that kind of stuff. But it is also the genre where you're most likely to have religious clergy as characters too. So that like that duality,
a capacity for both a lot of good and evil.
You know. And I'll talk about this in a little bit too, after you introduce some of the other topics to Marie, but I think that horror, especially horror for children, is a really great way to introduce some of these different diverse people. Like when I talk about representation for LGBTQ families, you know, like showing two mom families like my own or two dad families, because horror for children, it tends to get banned anyway. And yet it is still one of the best selling genres for children of all time. So you know that even if they don't have it at your school library, you know that kids are going to seek out horror. And so I feel like as a horror author who is LGBTQ and who writes for children, that it's like, the windows are open. This is the time. And I'm getting in there.
So that will take us to our first regular segment, the fucking news. Just quite literally what it sounds like. So our first story. Oh, man, I'm so excited to hear what you guys have to say about this. So this is just one of those little you know, write the sexpert sort of articles. It was on Slate, and a pair of parents have a 14-year-old son who identifies as bisexual. And through the course of whatever, they ended up searching under his bed. I think they were looking for a cat. And they found him, and they found a small spray bottle of oil and an unidentified, like phallic-shaped object. When they talked to the kid, he like completely owned up and it was like, yeah, no, that was for doing stuff in my butt. And so then they had a long conversation with him about, you know, safety and inserting things in your body. And they had like a very frank discussion with this kid and about flared bases and those kind of things. But they wrote in because they were just still concerned. They're like, should we be more concerned than we are? And there's a really great response to it. And when we can talk about it, because I feel like we're going to have a lot of similar things to say as the respondents did. But I don't even know who to tee up first, because we got Shanna, who's a sex educator, mom of a son. And I got a Daryl over here. I don't know. Have at it, y'all.
No, Shanna, please.
You know, I would say that as a parent, that's a parenting win to me. I currently have really young children, but even now I spend a lot of time building that trust, because right now they might come to me with something like tattling, right? Like, and it's like, it doesn't matter. That's not life or death. But in those moments, having those conversations, that's building the foundation for when they need to come and tell me something serious or highly personal. And so, you know, if my kiddo came, if I asked my kiddo this question and we had already built the foundation in our family to have these questions openly, and that we could even get past, think about the fact that they even got to get in depth in this conversation, because think about other like teenagers that you might know, like how they just like crumble in on themselves and like die a little bit talking to their parents. And so this demonstrated to me that they're doing fantastic work. And if they needed more information, they did just the right thing. Ask an expert, do your research, find out, you know, what is true and what isn't. So I say, you know, bravo.
Totally. Just the fact that I can, I go back immediately in my head to times when I was dying inside when my mom was trying to be like, this is how vaginas work, Daryl. And I was like, no, I don't even like them, which wasn't true. Great taste, less filling. But yeah, it was fantastic to introduce the idea of flared bases, because, covering safety first. Mm-hmm. Absolutely wonderful. And, not trying to shame the child at all, which was.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like fantastic. It's like, hey, leaving it up to the child to be like this, I was putting it in my butt. Because if you're in a child's room and there's an object and some oil, you're like, yeah, they're sticking it in themselves. Like that's, it's kind of, I wonder if I, as a parent, would just be like, stop putting stuff in yourself.
I'd be like, they're secretly working on spells, and this is their mortar and pestle situation. Oh. And I'm going to be like, are you engaging in witchcraft? If so, let me help you. Exactly.
You need three people, and thankfully, your parents are here to help close the circle.
Yeah.
Or create the triangle. I don't know. It's been so long since I watched The Craft.
I have these conversations with my kids when they're old enough that... I'm going to be forced to do one of those scenarios, like from our boomer or silent generation grandparents, where they were like, to walk uphill 5 miles to school. My story is going to be, I had to have sex education in the basement of the church rectory, and they picked the youngest priest on staff. We all wrote questions down on pieces of paper, and the priest picked them out at random and answered the questions. And that was my sex education. And I'm not going to be able to stop like telling them that story. I don't know if they're going to applaud me, roll their eyes, be like, oh, thank you for unlearning. Who knows? Probably roll the eyes.
You've come so far.
Yes.
Jeez Louise, yeah. I mean, so like in reading this particular question that they wrote in, one of the things that struck me and one of the things that the respondent, writer said, and like Heather Carina, they quoted, who's a writer for Scarlet Scene, who's the head of Scarlet Scene, which is like a sex education resource for kids. The parents were just very, very concerned about, this kid is 14 and they are like, is this too early and that kind of stuff? And the writer pointed out okay, so there's a big difference between being 14 when it comes to partnered sex and being 14 when it comes to masturbation. And like that, the fact that you're nervous about them being 14 is more about your own discomfort, because if there's not another person involved, especially not another person who's over 18, right, it's really not that weird, because like babies masturbate, like masturbation mm-hmm. is just a natural response to having parts that feel good. So like, it's not necessarily going to be like the vibe to go buy your kids sex toys, but you could buy them like things that will improve the safety, like maybe lube, maybe latex products or something like that. Because like, if they're using something repeatedly, a condom's a good way to, minimize the likelihood of it being gross, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And now
it's being stored under the bed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, you got to dedicate a drawer to it. Put it in your underwear, please. At least, take a small plastic bag with you. It's harder to get those nowadays. Take a small paper bag. Just put it somewhere where it's not, where the cat can rub up against it.
Right?
Right.
They found the elderly cat under the bed.
Oh, right? Ooh. Olive oil. I've got a picture in my head. I don't want to see it.
Right. Well,
and then we would also need to talk about if we're using olive oil as a lube, which is, it's not the worst thing that anybody's ever used for a lube, but then you do need to be concerned about so what are things made out of? And then if you're using latex, right, you're not going to be wanting to use olive oil. You'll want to use an actual proper lube. So that would definitely be one of the things I would want to explain to that kid, because you don't want to learn the hard way how latex gets degraded.
Right.
Yes, also, or how I can no longer cook dinner because all of my cooking oils disappear.
I had a trumpet in the seventh grade, and it would stick because it was like a public school and it was the public trumpet.
Oh,
We had to buy our own. It's not a reed. It's like the piece that you blow into. But I was putting cooking oil in it to lube it up. And I had to be told after many applications that that is not a good oil to lube up a trumpet. So I continued the defamation of this public trumpet. So I can only imagine what the olive oil was doing to the backside of this young person. But yeah, nowadays you can get like lube and sex toys and stuff at like a Walmart and other places. Yeah. So like, you know, it's while there is that thing of like, should I be buying my child sex toys? It's like, I think with a self-checkout, your child can go get them too. It just point them in that direction and be like, you know, yeah, make sure if you're putting it in there, you have a way to get it back out.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I really want to normalize the idea of like not shaming kids for doing, I mean, when we're talking to them very seriously about partnered sex and being a little bit cautious there, because there just are more factors. Like more factors. Like there might be pregnancy as a possibility. There might be STIs as a possibility. You know, there might be like just feelings and consent and like all the stuff that goes into that. But if we're talking partnered stuff and like, or non-partnered stuff, there are like some parents that will just get so squicked out by this idea. And especially if they've got little girls. And I'm like, you know, if you want this girl to stay away from douchebag fuckboys, the best way to do it is to make sure she can get herself off. So she does not need those douchebag fuckboys or does not think that that's the only way she's going to be able to get, you know, like her bits touched. Like, what I don't understand. Like, if you love your kid, first of all, why don't you want them to experience pleasure?
That's, you know.
And then B, the most protective thing you can do to protect your kids from like dusty boys is like making sure they know they are good on their own, that they don't need that.
And I mean, honestly, if you want your child to not do this stuff, tell them that you think it's okay that they do it. That's going to be an immediate yuck. Real fast. Like, I mean, you know, it might take a couple hours. Hormones are powerful, but you know, but they'll be like, oh my God, I'm never touching myself again. My mom just said it was all right to do that. And then they'll watch like one episode of like Access Hollywood and be like, well, it's nothing else to do but touch myself. Mario Lopez is very cute.
Oh, what a reference.
I think he's the host.
This is me finding out. I don't know. I'm glad he's still working.
Yeah, he's still working. He shows up on a lot of my podcasts advertising for like Access Hollywood or some kind of car or some.
Career-wise, I think he might be doing the best out of all the Saved by the Bell people.
Zach Morris is still doing stuff. He was like the head on a TV show like not too long ago. He was like a TV lawyer like a
crime
or something.
Yeah,
but none of us can name it.
No.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, you know. Definitely those two doing the best out of all of them.
Well, there was the Saved by the Bell, the newer one that they only had for like two seasons. And then like the pandemic messed it up. And that show was amazing. And I really wish it would have survived. Yeah, no, it was incredible. So the whole thing takes place again in like Southern California. But the premise is all of these kids from this like underserved area, their school gets shut down. So they have to get bused to this super fancy school. So the whole premise of it is all these like kids from these like impoverished neighborhoods coming and living in and being a part of the school system. And they talk, you know, about all of that kind of stuff. And there's queer characters and there's trans characters, and that's not a plot point, but they just are.
Right.
And, there's a couple of the people from the original show who are in it. Like Zach Morris plays the governor of California, who is still married to Kelly. And Slater's the gym coach there. And Jesse Spano is like the school counselor. And then Lark Voorhees, Lisa Turtle, makes like one appearance very briefly over Zoom. She's like, my lovers are waking up. I have to go make them breakfast. And she's like in Paris being a fashion designer. It actually ruled. It really did.
And then Donald Trump was like, we can't have this. Let the disease flourish.
That is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, do we have any more thoughts on anal masturbation?
I should have asked my priest, and I missed out on that chance to write that question on the slip of paper in the little priest box.
I mean, you can probably email him now.
I know. True. Who knows? By the advice he was giving, I don't know if he stayed a priest.
Oh. Mm. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
It's okay to touch yourself sometimes. Yep, you're not going to be a priest for very long. Nope. Mm-mm. I do wonder what the official Catholic opinion is on anal masturbation. Do they even cover?
Yeah, I think it was like a no. It was usually no masturbation at all because there's that. It's kind of that same stance about no contraception, that sex should always lead to procreation and masturbation cannot lead to procreation, and therefore you should not do it.
Yeah, that's the sin of onanism.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
The story of Onan, and he in the tradition of the folks at the time, if your brother dies, you marry his wife, right? So that she doesn't, you know, die in poverty.
Right.
And then, you know, you have to knock her up to solidify the whole thing. And he thought she was really hot. And so he decided to pull out so that he could like delay the, you know, like keep it going more times. So he could do more banging. And so he spilled his seed on the ground. And so that is the sin of Onan, which in the historical context is you're supposed to put it in there because it's supposed to, you know, we're supposed to be fruitful and multiply. But that has been interpreted since then as being the sin of masturbation. So, Bible.
So what he needs. I had no seed to spill. I just was not supposed to have any pleasure without the presence of a man.
And Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's always right there. Right, the Holy Spirit is right there.
See, watching.
Right there.
Santa Claus watching.
It's always partnered. That's why you keep saying "Oh God" in the middle of it.
Wow.
All sex is partnered because Jesus is there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but loving every minute of it. If not, he'd close his eyes.
Yeah, he could be anywhere. He could be like watching people eat breakfast, and this is where he chooses to be.
And he's like, I can't wait for you to finish with those eggs, so you can scramble your own.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. on that note, we're going to head to our next piece of fucking news, which has to do with this, I guess, our like heavier topic for today. It is just an exploration of when you are on antidepressants, how your libido and your sexual experience is changed by that. So this is based off of an article from, like, honestly, this is funny that it's Stylist. It's a UK magazine, and they just interviewed a bunch of women specifically about their experiences of dating and, you know, having to tell a partner, like, I am, whether they tell them they're on antidepressants or not, and just all that kind of stuff. So what did y'all think?
I think it's a very, I guess if you're not on antidepressants, you may not know that this is a thing, but yeah, from the time I've been on antidepressants for a few years now, and it was definitely one of the things that I'm very happy that the team of people I was working with was very upfront about and was like, you know, there are side effects to this stuff, and it's really more about, it's not about do the drugs work, it's about do you like how the drugs are making you feel, and in a holistic fashion, right? So it's like, if you are having sexual side effects and you don't like them, then you need to change the drug. It has no, it's you know what I mean? Whether it's helping your mood or not. Right. So I think very cool. And yeah, it was nice to see so many people be forthright about that in their lives and dating and such.
I liked what they listed this person as Hannah and said that she was 30. And I really resonated with the advice that she got from her mom. She said that she got advice from her mom to hide your meds when somebody that you're dating comes over to your house. And you know, that idea, many of the women interviewed talk about stigma as well. And that idea of stigma and shame is getting better, I think, in our mental health conversations. But I know that any type of dating advice that, or, you know, mental health advice that I ever received from family members was absolutely about shame and, you know, not letting people know this part of you until you can be, you know, ensured that they love you and they'll be able to handle this. But when I was reading the different stories, I thought that, you know, the Dr. L is somebody else they interviewed, and she talked about really openly about, like, hey, if the topic is raised, share. If people react badly to this really important information, then you have a really great reason to hit the eject button. And I think that I see it as a way to see that you're somebody that you're dating really takes their mental health seriously. Because the most frustrating, you know, I think the most frustrating situation you can be in, whether it's dating, friendship, or family, is somebody who denies that they need mental health support, or is too ashamed to be able to, you know, go out and get it or seek services or take medication. And if you're there, like, hey, I manage my mental health and I manage it well, and I'm feeling great, and I would love to share more of myself with you in this dating situation, it sounds like a major green flag.
Totally.
Yeah. I think another thing that I wanted to talk about in this area is that, so for especially folks who are on selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, like, so Prozac would be a big example of that. Those drugs do have pretty significant impacts on libido and orgasm. And very rarely is that brought up by doctors. I mean, maybe they're getting better now, but it has historically not been a thing they've been super good about letting people know about. And so one of the things that I would just point out is, like, first of all, if whatever medication it is that helps you get yourself together for your life, that's the right one. But you also have the option to, like, switch if you don't want the side effects. Like, if you're having a rough time because, like, this is causing difficulty for your relationships, and you're not able to come up with a workaround, or it's, like, just really super important to you that you'd be able to come, like, those kind of things, like, understandable. Switch medications. I mean, work with your doctor on it so you're not just, like, cold turkey, but you don't have to live with terrible side effects of things. You have the right to advocate for yourself. And when I was younger, I was put on an SSRI, and of course they didn't tell me anything about it because I'm a girl, and, like, why would you tell a girl anything about sexuality? And it wasn't until I was literally a psych major in college that I came to be like, that's why. And you know, really huge loss of trust for a lot of people who had not felt like I needed that information, and immediately made choices to switch things up for myself. So just want to make sure everybody, you know, knows your doctor works for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Your doctor works for you. And yeah, like I said before, it's like, you, if you don't like the side effects of a thing, that is also one of the effects of the thing. Right. So you have to take the whole, you know, you have to take the whole thing. Like, you know, I mean, you know, there are limits. It's not like I don't want to take antibiotics because I need to keep drinking. That's different. You know, antibiotics for a short amount of time. But you could stop drinking for a little bit. You don't have to come all the time is, you know, not the way to approach your mental health.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like, I am, like, to your point, Shan, I am impressed with the way that the world is speaking more openly about mental health. And that alone is going to just, like, help people out so that they, like, seek help and then maintain it. And, like, yeah, normalize the idea that it's, like, difficult to be a person and we have the technology to help.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Any other thoughts on this guy before we move to the next silliness? All right, then it is our final piece of fucking news. This one is an interesting one. So I happened upon this article from the Puget Sound, like, trail. Like, so this for context, this source is they have articles about things like taking trains and like just random random news bits. It's extremely strange, but this article was about male birth control, and it was one of the first ways that I found out about this male birth control pill, TDI 11861, and it was introduced in February of 2023. There have been a lot of different attempts at male birth control other than condoms and mastectomies. Those are really the primary ones, but there has not been a lot of political will by the pharmaceutical companies to do anything about it. They have lots of options, including like reversible sterilizations, things like that, but they don't have the desire to go through the expensive process of getting those things approved by the FDA in the US, because they're A, would not be super profitable because they're good for a long time, and B, mm-hmm. a lot of men are very, very reticent to do anything that is going to impact their ejaculation. So in this particular birth control that was just introduced, it's a temporary one. It like will impact the motility of the sperm for like 24 hours, but you can stop taking it and it will like return back because sperm is constantly created. It doesn't impact your entire system in the same way that like a lot of the female hormonal birth controls are. So it sounds like it's a lot less of a commitment, but it's still going to be too much for a lot of men. And then they also discussed like another form that had been basically a side effect of a birth control, birth control ended up being a side effect of, I think it was like a
blood pressure
medication. Yeah. That they found that, it caused men to stop ejaculating, but they still had an orgasm, which would mean that you still come, you just don't have like the shooting out part of it.
There's no receipt. Yeah.
Yeah. And that apparently was too emasculating to become popular. And it's just like, you guys, man, like, you got to do some of it, some of the time. It's some like something like, guys, you got to be willing to do part of it, like a little bit. Like, so yeah. What y'all think reading this?
We cover male birth control like every time it pops up. And it's because we're like, every time since the beginning of DTF, every time it comes up, I'm like, this is great. Oh my God. Isn't this fantastic? You can just leave it in. It's fantastic. And yeah, and then every time they're like, oh, they could get no men to sign up for the trial. Every man said, oh, the pill gave me a headache, and then they never came back. And it's just, yeah, the bar is so low for men in most things. And but you know, this one seems fun. I like the idea of my sperm not having legs. It's cool. Just, you know, it's gonna make a weird mouth noise to get across the non-motility. But yeah, this is absolutely great. I think it's awesome. And just like the article says, come on, dudes, don't be dudes about this.
I think it's connected to what you were talking about with the anal masturbation story, Timory, with the spilling of the seed and that kind of loss of the seed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I am an author, I went back into kind of words when I was thinking about this article, and I went into kind of a Google vortex of the word virility, and this idea of like, you know, it making men less virile. Because, you know, a headache is kind of an excuse, you know, like, oh, I had a headache, I don't want to do it. But I think that, you know, that's just, again, an excuse, and that we think about the ideas of manliness, masculinity, and virility in our culture. And that tells us a little bit more about why someone would say, oh, I have a headache, instead of, oh, well, I have a headache, and that's the least of my worries. Look at me. I now have control over my own, you know, over contraception or whatever. And so I went back a little bit farther. And, you know, this idea of Western masculinity and virility. Yeah, it's in ancient Greece, but mostly the way that we think about it nowadays is from ancient Rome. And this idea of virilitas was the word that they used for it. And it like quite literally means the male organs. Mm. And wow. One of the ways that like virilitas was, think about like Russell Crowe in Gladiator, right? Yes, it was about kind of this this rugged stoicism and things like that. But it was a conversation between discipline and vigor. And also this conversation between virilitas tied to being procreative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were to ejaculate and there is nothing there that could possibly procreate, even if you didn't want to, is it still a message to like men inside that I am not virile because there isn't even a chance? Right. You know, is that an interesting message? If you want to go down that giant wormhole, it was an article that I read in the New Yorker called When Men Wanted to Be Virile by Joshua Rothman, and he quotes this book called A History of Virility from Columbia University Press and said it's about the size of a phone book. So we can go deep into that, but I'll also throw in there this idea that I think we see that play both ways, because we also see a ton of funding for erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. and yet zero funding or research for menopause. Mm-hmm. And this idea that just women are just supposed to suck it up and deal with it, with whatever pain and discomfort. As a person who's given birth twice, I can say that that's absolutely the way that you are looked at in a hospital. And so it struck me interesting about this larger conversation about virility and what might, you know, low sperm motility actually mean to manhood.
Yeah, but the bar's in hell. It's like, come on, man. Like, yeah, have some agency over your own ability to reproduce. Like, just having the ability to do that in a pill form, where it's not, you know, I can get the condoms don't feel the same. I can get the I don't want anybody snipping my vas deferens. I can understand those like outside actions being something that you could say, oh, I'm skeptical of or fearful of, but like you can just take a pill and you won't get anybody pregnant. I don't care if that pill gives me pins and needles in my hands and feet for the rest of my life. Like just, you know, but yeah, anyway.
There's a lot of like trust related issues in here too. So like a person who comes to mind who would probably benefit from this, but would not have the, you know, like the comfort with that, like virility thing that Shanna's discussing. Like if you're one of those guys that thinks like women are trying to trap you, or something like that, like you could be in control of this. Right. And then you don't have to worry about if she took her pill or not, you could be in charge. But like, if you think women are trying to trap you, probably don't like women a whole lot. So like you're not going to take on that responsibility. And also if I can get pregnant, I'm going to be, speaking for myself, more concerned about making sure that pill gets taken at the right time every day than the person who does not directly experience those consequences. So like having to trust that your sperm shooting partner is going to take their pill at the same time every day is a real big amount of trust. And it's like, 'cause if they mess up on that, it's not a really good sign for them being like super good at taking care of any offspring that would come from it. So it's like, that kind of thing. That's another one of the reasons I don't know if there's going to ever be a lot of political will for it. Like, take care of your own stuff, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we've got the, you know, going back to some of those old myths, we've got that Beauty and the Beast kind of mythos that was really popular in the Victorian age as well, of this idea that women are supposed to make men better. Women are the people who control male sexuality. And that male sexuality in itself is wild. You know, you hear those things about, oh, you can't show your ankles, you know, and these things are still happening, you know, nowadays with modesty dressing and things like that, because, you know, you have to cover your body or you will appeal sexually to a man and then they're not responsible for how they react to you. And giving men that responsibility to be in charge of their own sexuality in that way also doesn't really match up with that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all the conversations around like abortion tend to fall on like, there's that game of like how long until the anti-abortion person ultimately says something to the effect of, but sluts need to be punished, you know? And like that is behind a lot of people's beliefs. And abortion is where it comes out most, like obviously, but like,
that is like the American story.
Yeah,
is that sluts need to be punished?
But it's like they got themselves pregnant, right?
That's the biblical story, right? That's Adam and Eve.
That's the Puritans leaving Europe because of all that damn sex, right? It's so yeah, and you know, I think Timmy and I bring it up pretty often, but like, yeah, that idea of sexual agency is like I think at the crux of a lot of our problems, like just that agency and being able to advocate for pleasure is like at the root of a lot of freedom of self and of others that our culture does not promote. And you've got to look around and wonder why they're not promoting it, if any of what we're saying is new to you.
Yeah. Well, I again thought one of the really weird pieces of this article is that I have not seen a lot of coverage again of this brand new medication, TDI, whatever.
TDI 11861. I want it in a gummy form. I want it sold at. I want it in like the put it with some those little immunity shots. Like, you know, it was like ginger. Like
5-hour energy.
Yeah, like ginger and orange juice. Like, shake it up. Like, hey, fight a cold and fight the biggest carrier of colds, which would be your children. Fight your children. That's what you should call it.
Really thinking ahead.
Exactly. I'm trying to stay safe. It's a post-pandemic.
Well, I need to make sure. I wonder if it's also that, you know, when men see the pain and discomfort associated with women and different contraceptive methods, that they, you know, they don't want to take that on if they don't have to. For example, you know, most women do not receive any local anesthetic or numbing for an IUD insertion into your flipping cervix.
Right.
Into your cervix. There is no anesthetic and nobody even asks you if you would like submit. There's not even an expectation. You're just supposed to put your feet in the stirrups and bite your lip or something.
At least give you a stick to bite
afterwards.
On.
Yeah. It's like, well, if you saw your partner go through that, are you like, oh yeah, I'm really, you know, I'm really excited to have to deal with this, but you're already going to do it, honey. So like, thank you.
Shanna actually got me through my first IUD insertion.
I remember that. It was horrible.
Ooh, buddy.
She was in so much pain.
I'm going to say that the very first IUD, and I'm not trying to scare anybody away from an IUD because I also will stand for an IUD. I'm about to get like my fourth one. But like, woo, buddy, they did not prepare for me for that. And I would say that and like when I had to have... when I got like a root canal on the wrong tooth, those would probably be the worst physical pain I've ever experienced in my life. And that was technically, you know, like the IUD insertion was just like a routine medical thing. It's not even like an injury. It's not like I got, you know, I've been in bike accidents. Like, you know, like my skin's turned off. And then that, woo, buddy, is all I got to say.
Tim, ask your doctor or wherever you're going next time to see if they
drug you up.
Some pain management.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, things have definitely gotten better since then, because the first time was so long ago. And first of all, I didn't know what to ask for. And so now I know that I could ask for, there's medications that'll soften the cervix. I can also ask for, you know, prescriptions for pain meds to get in advance. Like, I understand that now in a way that I did not at the time. First of all, I was younger. And second of all, I think it's much more understood now and more normalized to have these discussions. So yeah, for my next one, I'm going to be doing a little bit of that. And it also, I think, is physically easier for me now than it was the first time. Like, if my cervix had never been open before at all, like, this is like, whoa, buddy, is really all I can say.
I wonder how much of it is the cultural thing of, like, you're doing a slut thing, so there should be pain. I know the first time I went to go get an STI test, the doctor, and I was like, it was still my pediatrician, and the doctor was like, all right, cool, you know, lay on this table, I got to take a swab, and they stuck a Q-tip in my penis, and the pain that I felt was, it was outrageous. Like, how, one, it was quick, but like, just the pain in that moment, I was like, you did not prepare me for this. And come to find out, you can just take blood for a lot of these things. Like, so I wonder how much of it is just bad, just that sex negativity in the culture that is being given to doctors.
Yes.
Yeah, we've talked about that before on the show, and like, you know, the lack of sex ed training for medical professionals is real. I do think these things are getting better, you know, but still.
Right. And the only way it's going to get better is more people talking about it and whatnot. And, you know, I do wonder, I'm pretty sure it was a white pediatrician. I wonder if she would have done that for a white boy who asked for it. Who knows? Because that's also, there is a,
that too.
There's also that thing about pain. So yeah, who knows? But yeah, most of this stuff shouldn't hurt. If it doesn't have to, it shouldn't. Because all that's going to do is make people less likely to trust the medical system. It's going to make people less likely to divulge that kind of information to medical professionals. And, you know, y'all all said you would do no harm.
Or to go to the doctor in the first place. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So with that, we will
Put those in Tic Tacs, man. Oh my God. Do you know how awesome it would be? Oh my goodness. You like, what was it? I know it was like a video of trans youth all taking their testosterone shots at the same time. Like, they're like, cheers, and they all did it at the same time. Like, oh my God, the way that you would do that with your boys before you went outside. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, it's Thirsty Thursdays. Hey, I got these pills. Shake them up. Let's go.
Get some sponsors.
For you know? Real.
Like an alcohol company.
Yes.
Like, are you put headed to the bar?
In my weed.
Yeah.
Man, oh my goodness. I can only imagine the power of something like this. Like, look at how, I mean, you know, Viagra was a blood pressure medication that had a side effect. And it's like, look at how much money they've made on that.
Ooh, buddy.
Because it's supporting virility.
All right. But this, how can you not say that this supports virility? I don't know. No. But I know it has to do with the things, but whatever. My goodness.
I hope that my son and daughter have so much freedom and options. I would love to be able to talk to my son about something like this and be able to have him be in control. And I hope that it just keeps getting. I hope that something like this comes around, it gets tested, it's available. As a parent, I think it would be a fantastic tool for sex positivity and exploration while also protecting your kids and their future.
If you're going on that date, you're taking this pill, boy.
That's right. It's like in a grilled cheese sandwich, sponsored by Kraft Singles.
Craft single, so you stay single.
Ooh, that's it.
Don't become a single parent. Have a craft single. Yeah.
Go on. Added with added benefits.
All right. With that, we're going to head to our next regular segment. which is fucking idiot, fucking brilliant. We're going to go into our idiot story first. And Shanna, you were a particularly good guest to be on to talk about the subject of book bans. It has been a meteoric rise in the attempts to ban books, both from libraries and from schools and that sort of thing. We've been seeing like this exponential increase all across. However, it's also, you know, we're looking at the data on who is doing it, and it's like 11 people are responsible for, you know, thousands of these things. Yeah. The Washington Post reported that in May, 60% of the book challenges in 2021-2022 school year came from just 11 people. But then they share their instructions on how to do this. And groups like Moms for Liberty and Laverna in the Library are trying to just ban dozens and dozens at a time. More than 3,300 books were banned in the 2022-23 school year. These are overwhelmingly books that have issues of race, racism, LGBT issues, stuff like that. Overwhelmingly, that's what they're referring to as obscenity. So as a mom, as a writer, all that kind of stuff, what do you... How is this impacting you, Shan?
Well, I'm living in this every day because I have had this philosophical question with myself often, especially because my passion is in writing for younger audiences. But I also have a passion for my family and for our representation. Because as a two-mom family, I mean, there was, when I got married to my wife and we were pregnant with my son, almost everybody at our baby shower got us the same book because there's only one. There's only one. So it was so sweet of them. I mean, they must have sold out the stock at Amazon, but there was only one book. And it's this idea of, okay, so, you know, I'm an idealist. And so I am approaching my art as in, you know, how can I publish a book that doesn't reflect my, the way that my life looks? And so, but I know that there are some very real repercussions to that, that it is likely that I won't get picked up by a publisher, period. It's likely that I'll never get past an editor. It's likely that even if my book does get picked up, it might be banned. It might not have the support from the publisher that a different book would get. And that what I really loved about this particular article is it really made it real about how it affects authors, because they're in the author community. There is this kind of mythos that if your book gets banned, that's actually a good thing. And I mean, that makes us feel a little bit better to write, you know, with creative autonomy, but in the long run, it's no good. Not only does your book not get into the hands of your readers who want it, but you know, your book has been banned. One of the ways that authors really connect with their child audiences is through school visits. And if you have a, like, if you have a banned book, you are going to be, you know, kept out of many of those different school visits, even if your book is in their library, but they just don't want to rock the boat or something like that. And when I approach my work, I think, you know what, folks, I don't want to rock the boat. I'm just writing a cool book that has nothing to do with being gay. It's just that gay families and gay people exist, like queer people exist, and they're just existing within this plot story. For example, I'm working on a middle grade horror novel right now that's about an evil unicorn. And in the current draft, the main character has two dads. And I have sat down with my wife and said, do I need to take it out? Do I need to take the two dads out until I can get my foot in the door? Because then you have a lot more freedom to, you know, you have more publications, you have a lot more freedom, like how, you know, Carrie by Stephen King was a very readable volume. And then, you know, nowadays he writes like enormous tomes because he can do whatever the fuck he wants. And so there's, you know, there's this idea. But I wanted to bring up to both of you one of the things that I think answers this question, period. And this is something that as a student of children's literature and also as an author, it's one of the mantras that we have. It's this idea that was proposed by Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop in 1990, and it's called Windows, Mirrors, and Sliding Glass Doors. And it's this idea that children's literature should reflect, it should be a mirror to children to be able to recognize themselves within it, because it is crucial for children to see themselves represented. And it is harmful to them, actually harmful, if they do not see this representation. And so it isn't this idea of, oh, we're going to ban these books and, well, kids are not going to grow up gay anymore. I'm sorry, but they're already queer, and you're just preventing them from being able to see a positive, interesting representation that they actually exist on the planet. And then there's this idea that it's also a window and then eventually a sliding glass door for all sorts of other kids to be able to experience difference and to see and understand the reality of different experiences that children and different families might encounter. You know, because that's where compassion comes from. That's where empathy comes from. And when we start banning these different stories, it is incredibly dangerous for everyone involved. And I give a final shout out to all of the fantastic people doing this work, not also authors, but librarians. Mm-hmm. I know that things are being imposed on librarians, but almost every librarian I ever met was an incredible champion for against censorship in their libraries. And also agents, literary agents are doing a fantastic job at supporting queer authors. I know my agent, Paige Turlip at Andrea Brown Literary Agency, is devoted to diverse voices, diverse stories. And there are lots of agents out there working with editors, making these relationships, trying to get these books out there.
Fighting the good fight.
Yeah. And sadly, it's a fight that will keep going. I mean, it is like the definition of like fucking weak sauce. Like, it's like when you know that your opinion is in the minority and you still want to rule. When you want minority rule, what's the first thing that you try to do? You try to influence the children, and you try to, you know, the problem you attack is not the opposition, but it's what people are educated on. Right. And yeah, it sucks that these people have that there are people who will put money behind these efforts, because it does take time and effort to get 11 people to do this crap. And if they're doing it at such a big scale, it's because they are not worried about where their next meal is coming from. You know, and the whole idea of diversity of thought is so that we can all recognize what ideas need to be laughed out of the room, and the people who are being laughed out of the room are willing to engage in skullduggery to keep this shitty opinions around. Yeah. And
that's a fantastic word.
Yeah. It's skullduggery. It's fantastic.
Oh,
it's,
man, it's good.
It's a good time.
I also just want to label it correctly. Like, these people are perverts. Like, let's be like, if there's a pervert in the world and you're using it in a pejorative way, it's these fucking creeps who are reading children's literature, looking for lurid bits, and then reading it out loud at city council meetings. What a pervert. And not in the fun way, you know, like, cause they're making okay, first of all, it's out of context and that's not how any of this works. Second of all, you have a weird fetish And like, it's okay that you do. And if what you want to do is read children's literature for the juiciest bits so you can have some lurid fantasy in your head, go for it. Just leave me the hell out of it. Just leave me the hell out of it. We need to label this prudery for what it is, which is like, what kind of a fanatic do you have to be to spend your time like this? And then they go into these meetings and I see the, and it's like, this guy is like reading a segment out of a book. And it's just like the look of disgust on his face. And I'm like, you are getting off on this so hard. And I did not ask to be a part of your weird exhibitionism. Like, totally. Leave me out of it. Leave the kids out of it.
Gatekeepers, right. Man, gatekeepers in children's literature are as old as, you know, the time when we stopped just thinking about children as little adults that we just raised to, you know, go into the factory when they were old enough. And finally, when we came up with this idea of childhood innocence and that children needed to be protected from information, which, you know, kind of harkens back to that anal masturbation conversation that a parent was having with their child, you know, that that child, that information should be restricted from children and their kind of autonomy and critical thinking skills aren't going to work for them. But like I said, right at the beginning, I think that as a horror author, it's the perfect genre. And honestly, queer horror is having an absolute heyday right now. If you, you know, if you don't read any queer horror yet, just pick up Other Terrors, an inclusive anthology, because so many fantastic queer horror writers have a story in there, including Hayley Piper, who just won the Bram Stoker Award for Best First Novel. She is a trans author. She won the award for her novel Queen of Teeth, which is about the vagina dentata.
Nice.
It's a fantastic read, but like queer horror is doing amazing things, and because it's already sidelined as a genre. And so I think, again, I think it's one of those windows, mirrors, and sliding glass doors. And I am there knocking on the window, being like, hey, boo, I'm here. let's talk about this stuff.
Yeah. In the interest of time, we should probably head to our final segment. Totally. So that is going to take us to fucking brilliant. So this is the good news. We're going to end on a very positive note here, because in Amsterdam, they made a decided, concerted effort to combat HIV by just putting a bunch of money and effort into getting pre-exposure prophylaxis to people who are vulnerable to HIV, especially like sex workers, because as many of you already know, sex work is legal there. And according to figures from the Dutch AIDS Fund, there were only 9 new cases of HIV in Amsterdam in 2022.
It's incredible.
And the year before that, it was only 66. And it is just, that means it since like 2019 has dropped off 95%, and their goal is to reach zero. And at this rate, they could do it. Mm-hmm. So pre-exposure prophylaxis, also known as PrEP, is a medication that, will make it impossible for someone with HIV to transmit it to someone else. And if you do not already have it, it will make it so that you can't get it. It is one of the best tools that we currently have against HIV, in addition to like condoms and other barriers like that. Just fucking stunning. I love it.
Absolutely fantastic. Given what we were just talking about, imagine if we could have numbers like that for unwanted pregnancies. Mm-hmm. Come on, dudes. Take those pills. But yeah, like just the, I mean, it just goes to show you what, when you put money and effort towards a thing that is an undeniable good, what can happen, right? Just, yeah, take your PrEP and do that. And I know that there are a bunch of studies and things being done in the US to try to mimic these sorts of numbers. And, you know, make sure you elect people who are sex positive and not weirdos Just yeah, don't if anyone's from Indiana, do not elect them to office.
I have to drive through Indiana often, and I always feel my rights leaving me flying away as I cross the border, and then I celebrate when I get them back when I drive somewhere else.
Yeah, just there are people in Indiana who I love, but man, do I give them bombastic side eye anytime one of their people makes the news. But yeah, we can do this kind of stuff. Like HIV can be a thing of the past if we take the, you know, billions of dollars that we give our government and turn it into something that can help people as opposed to, you know, police them.
There's something that I learned about PrEP, which I thought was really great to also mention, which is that there have been a lot of studies. You can look at like the World Health Organization and things like this that, for example, you know, if you are bisexual or polyamorous and you are, you know, having sex or relationships with both men and women, that being on PrEP has been shown to absolutely not affect fertility and be safe for trying to get pregnant, being pregnant, or breastfeeding. And so, you know, they haven't shown any significant risk in that particular area. So it's a really great way to prevent infection within yourself and protect your partners as well, no matter what, you know, no matter what parts they might have.
And like, so just this, the state of HIV right now is so impressive. Like in my young sex educator days, never would have seen it getting here. I started out as an HIV prevention counselor. And this year in February, a guy in Germany became the fifth person worldwide to be cured of HIV. Mm-hmm. And we've covered most of these cases every time they pop up on DTF, but like if somebody ends up with like stem cell treatments because they also have leukemia in addition to being HIV positive, in some of these cases it has cured them through these stem cell transplants. So like it is opening up worlds of possibility, not only in preventing, you know, transmission in the first place, but being able to cure people of this, which was unthinkable. Yeah. when I first got into the field. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bravo.
Yeah.
And so, there are some side effects to PrEP as well. So, you know, talk to your doctor. You know, it's an individual decision you have to make based on your physical health. But it's for an overwhelming majority of the population, this is a good thing that you can take. And you can I know that there've been, I don't know if it's common practice yet, but it's like you can take PrEP just because, you know, for like 3 days, and it should cover you for like a weekend. Or is it, now I'm blanking on the specifics of it, but there are it's a pill you can take to just not be transmittable for a certain number of days. So it can be kind of off and on. It's not like you have to do it forever is the point.
Amazing. Yeah. No, this is all of the stuff that I just want to shout out to all the scientists involved, all the health educators, the people who are making sure that this information gets to people, yeah. The science communicators, just like Daryl when he's pooping, you know?
Yep.
So I guess on that positive note, let's just take it to Shanna. Where can people find out more about you? Where can they find your podcast? Where can they find your book? Where can they learn more about you in general?
Well, you can visit me at shannaheath.com. That's shannaheath.com. It's a constant work in progress because, as I said before, I can't just put my brain on one thing. There are links to other tears, an inclusive anthology there, and some of my other published stories that you can read, including a horrifying fairy tale called Crack Steppin'. And if you can, please buy Other Terrors from an independent bookstore or order from bookshop.org, which supports local independent bookstores. One of the most fantastic ways to help fight book bans is to support independent booksellers. You can also learn more about my podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's called Magic Day, Magic Night. And if you like the sound of my voice, allow me to help you fall asleep, relax with some identity affirming affirmations, because it's hard to be out there and to be queer. There's a lot of education that, you know, we have to do every day, especially as a queer mom on the playground, coming out every day over and over again. And we just need rest, and we deserve rest, and we deserve to release some of that energy, because resilience is one of our superpowers. But we need to turn it off. And one of the ways to do that is hopefully to have people tune into my podcast. So it'd be a pleasure if you joined me there on my website or on Instagram at mother_Marrow.
Nice. Thank you so much for coming on. This is
It's been a pleasure. Thank you both.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And Daryl, where could we find out more about you and buy your album? Black Jennifer.
You can go to darylcomedy.com for all of that. darylcomedy.com. You can see me at a variety of places. You can see us at Comedy Sports Philly for the next few months. So come through for that. DTF, Daryl and Tim Refund Hour. Also be on Play It Out at the end of October, and I'm continuing to do comedy, so
yeah.
It's you can find all that information at darylcomedy.com. Yeah. Dr. Timmery, where can the people find you?
You can head to drtimmery.com. That's drtimmarie.com. And I include links to news stories, including things we discussed on the show. And you can find tickets to our events, including DTF and other random education workshops and things like that that I am doing. So you can check that out there. So yeah, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for supporting DTF for over 10 years. If you do not know already, we have a Patreon where you can not only just support this show and sex positivity, but you can also listen to our new spinoff podcast, Book Report, where we talk about other nerdy stuff besides sex, but also usually sex, but also other stuff. And you can find that on Patreon. And the links are in our link tree, DT Fun Hour on Instagram, on Twitter. Go check that out there. Yeah, and thank you to our editor, Flirt Vonnegut. And thank you all, for listening and supporting. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye-bye. Thanks. With the team if you ain't down to fuck.